ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So we are reading today from 7th canto, chapter number 9, chapter entitled Prahlad Pacifies the Lord with Prayers, text number 46.
Mauna vrata sruta tapo dhyayayan swadharma. Vyakya raho japa samadhya apavaragya. Praya param purushate tva jitendriyanam. Varta bhavantya utana vatra tudambikanam.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are 10 prescribed methods on the path of liberation. To remain silent, not to speak to anyone, to observe vows, to amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge, to undergo austerities, to study the Vedas and other Vedic literatures, to execute the duties of Varnashram Dharma, to explain the Shastras, to stay in a solitary place, to chant mantras silently, and to be absorbed in trance. These different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and means of livelihood for those who have not conquered their senses. Because such persons are falsely proud, these procedures may not be successful. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.15,
Kechit kavalaya bhakta vasudeva parayana agam dunvanti krishnena niharam eva bhaskara.
Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. The real purpose of human life is to attain liberation from material entanglement. Such liberation may be achieved by many methods, tapasa brahmacharyena samena cha damena cha. But all of them more or less depend on tapasya, austerity, which begin with celibacy. Sukadev Goswami says that those who are Vasudeva Parayana, who have fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Vasudev, Krishna, automatically achieve the results of mauna, silence, vrata, vows, and other such methods simply by discharging devotional service. In other words, these methods are not so powerful. If one takes to devotional service, all of them are very easily performed. Mauna, for example, does not mean that one should not stop speaking. The tongue is meant for speaking, although sometimes to make a big show, a person remains silent. There are many who observe silence some day in a week. Vaishnavas, however, do not observe such silence. Silence means not speaking foolishly. Speakers at assemblies, conferences and meetings generally speak foolishly like toads. This is described by Sri Rupa Goswami as Vacho Vegam. One who wants to say something can show himself to be a big orator, but rather than go on speaking nonsense, better to remain silent. This method of silence therefore is recommended for persons very attached to speaking nonsense. One who is not a devotee must speak nonsensically because he does not have the power to speak about the glories of Krishna. Thus, whatever he says is influenced by the illusory energy and is compared to the croaking of a frog. One who speaks about the glories of the Lord, however, has no need to be silent. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends Kirtani Sada Hari. One should go on chanting the glories of the Lord 24 hours a day. There is no question of becoming mauna or silent. The 10 processes for liberation or improvement on the path of liberation are not meant for the devotees. Kevalya Bhaktya. If one simply engages in devotional service to the Lord, all 10 methods of liberation automatically observed. Prahlad Maharaj's proposal is that such processes may be recommended for the Ajitendriya, those who cannot conquer their senses. Devotees, however, have already conquered their senses. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. A devotee is already freed from material contamination. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore said,
Dushta mana tumi kishera vaishnava pratishtara tare nirja niragare tava hari nama kevala kaitava.
There are many who like to chant the Hare Krishna mantra in a silent, solitary place. But if one is not interested in preaching, talking constantly to the non-devotees, the influence of the modes of nature is very difficult to surpass. Therefore, unless one is extremely advanced in Krishna consciousness, one should not imitate Haridas Thakur, who had no other business than chanting the holy names always, 24 hours a day. Prahlad Maharaj does not condemn such a process. He accepts it. But without active service to the Lord, simply by such methods, one generally cannot attain liberation. One cannot attain liberation simply by false pride. Hare Krishna. So, seeking the blessings of all the assembled devotees, today's class actually should have been given by Dwarkadish Prabhu. But because of some emergency, he had to rush, and somehow by the causeless mercy of Hare Krishna Prabhu, I'm sitting over here. A very poor substitute. We all know Dwarkadish Prabhu is one of our senior most Grihastha congregation members and a very, very wonderful speaker on the Srimad Bhagavatam, a lot of realizations. So for a few minutes, he'll have to tolerate me with my insignificant rendition of this Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we are continuing the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj to pacify the Lord. And in this beautiful shloka, continuing from what His Holiness Chandramouli Swami spoke yesterday so wonderfully on this very, very important shloka, Yan Maitunadi Grahamedi Sukham Hituchyam, which is often quoted by Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas in their classes. The whole material civilization is centered around sex life. And to what extent people will go in order to try to enjoy their senses. So in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying that austerity means controlling your sex desire or celibacy. And we see from the lives of the great devotees how it is that just because they are controlled in this one particular aspect, that they are celibate, even people who are enjoying their senses are affected by such persons. And one such example was, of course, Sukadeva Goswami himself. When he came out of the womb of his mother and then proceeded to the forest. And as he was walking, he came across a group of ladies who were actually enjoying themselves in a lake. And although Sukadeva Goswami was not wearing any clothes, and he was a very handsome personality, very well-formed limbs and very majestic body, still, the ladies who were enjoying themselves in the lake were not at all disturbed, because they could see that here was a person who had completely controlled his senses. The aura that was coming from Sukadeva Goswami was so wonderful that just by looking at him, they could make out that he was not at all affected. And immediately after that came his father, Vyasadeva. And these ladies, looking at Vyasadeva, immediately covered themselves. So this is the power of celibacy. And throughout the scriptures we see how devotees of the Lord want to take up to this process of celibacy in order to achieve greater spiritual progress. Just like the example of Maharaj Priyavrat. Now, Maharaj Priyavrat was actually the heir apparent to the throne after Swayambhu Manu. But because he came into contact with Narad Muni, who preached to him and told him that the higher purpose of life is to renounce everything, Maharaj Priyavrat went and started practicing austerities. And later on, when the time came or the situation arose that Maharaj Priyavrat had to come back and take over the reins of the kingdom, because Dhruva Maharaj had left, Maharaj Uttanapad had left, and Swayambhu Manu, who was in retirement, had no intentions of coming back. So we see a unique situation over here. Swayambhu Manu is actually pleading with his son to come and take over the reins of the kingdom, because he had no intentions of coming back from his retirement. And Maharaj Priyavrat, because he knew that this particular service that he would be taking up would be very entangling, he desisted. He told Swayambhu Manu, his father, that please do not engage me in this activity. And then Swayambhu Manu had to call his father, Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma came and explained to Maharaj Priyavrat that this is actually your duty, your responsibility is to take over the reins of the kingdom. And then Maharaj Priyavrat agreed. And Srimad Bhagavatam explains that actually Swayambhu Manu was very relieved when he reinstated, or when he put Maharaj Priyavrat as the king of the whole planet Earth. He was very relieved. So it's a very unusual situation. Person who could have been so powerful, because nowadays the general tendency is for people to continue till the end of their lives, somehow or the other, to hold on to power. But in the olden days, people realized that, yes, we have to do our duty up to a particular point of time. But beyond that, we have to renounce and go into the forest. And that is the second point that Srila Prabhupada is making over here about mauna. Why is it that a person goes into the forest? Basically, to abstain from talking. Yeah. This whole material civilization is based upon how best you can present yourself. Not merely in terms of your physical appearance, of course that is very important, but in addition to that, how you present yourself in terms of your ability to speak. And the most successful business people are those who are having the best ability to speak and convince others. And particularly we see so many advertisements that come in the papers about people who are experts in management and who would like to present to others about how to manage businesses. Very, very successful people. And such people earn millions of dollars a year just by speaking. They just go to various places and make presentations on how to conduct your business in such a way that you can make more money. And even when a person is selected in any organization, the benchmark to evaluate his ability to manage in that particular job that he is supposed to be doing is how well he can speak. And that is why we have so many tests that the companies conduct, not just on your analytical ability or your ability to understand your particular subject matter, but how well you can present yourself. And if you go to any social organization, if you go to a club, or if you go to a party, or if you go to a marriage, that's all people do. People talk. They want to talk about everything under the sun. They want to talk about their relatives. They want to talk about their business. They want to talk about their friends, their neighbors. And throughout, in such groups, which we are sometimes required to grow, we find that people are all the time talking. And everybody wants to speak something. Everybody wants to share what he knows with the others. to such an extent sometimes that people are so overpowering, trying to impose whatever they want to say, that they become completely antisocial. And in fact, if you really analyze, when one wants to begin a conversation, when two people come together, the first thing that they ask each other is, how are you? Right? That is the beginning of a conversation. How are you? Right? And actually what they are talking about is, how is your health? Right? They want to know, how is your health? But for a spiritualist, this particular question has got no relevance. In fact, after several years, I came to know that whenever I would meet His Holiness Radhanath Swami, after a long time, I would ask him, how are you? Right? But then I realized that's not a question that he wants to be asked. No spiritualist would want to be asked, how is your health? Because this material body is, in any case, gradually going to die. So what is the point in keeping on asking about this particular body again and again and again? And people do get irritated. And in fact, as you practice Krishna consciousness and you also come to the realization that this body is temporary and it's only a matter of time that you are going to die, when somebody asks you this question, you also get irritated. Yeah? And in fact, I was just trying out a particular experiment recently when I was there in a marriage. One of our relatives were getting married. So somebody came to me and asked me, how are you? I said, I'm not feeling well. I'm not feeling well. He says, what's wrong with you? Because this normally when somebody is asked, how are you? Even though he may not be feeling well, he says that, yes, I'm feeling well. Everything is all right with me. But then I said, no, I'm not feeling well. So he asked me, what is wrong with you? So I told him, I got cancer. And he was really taken aback and said, cancer? Yes, I told him, I got cancer. So he asked me, what sort of cancer do you have? I mean, after about a few minutes, it took him that much of time to digest, you know, that here was a person who is terminally ill, who has just got a few more months to live. So after a few minutes, with a very sad face, he asked me, what sort of cancer do you have? Is it blood cancer? Is it lung cancer? So I told him, I got time cancer. I got this cancer of time. And actually, I found that this was a very good way to preach, because this was a very wonderful opening line. So he was bewildered for a minute. And then I told him, yes, even you have this cancer. Are you aware that you also have this cancer of time? And sooner or later, you're also going to die by this cancer? And then he started hearing me. And then I started telling him a little bit about the philosophy, and we were exchanging Krishna Katha. So Srila Prabhupada says over here that the whole goal of life, the whole purpose of a devotee is to preach. We are not here to maintain mauna. We are not here to maintain silence. That's not what is expected out of us. A devotee practicing Krishna consciousness preaches about Krishna, talks about Krishna. Machita madgata prana bodhayantas parasparam katayantas cha maam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. When devotees come together, what are they supposed to do? We are not supposed to be asking each other, how are you, how is the weather, how is your wealth, and how is your bank balance, and how is your wife, and how is your children, and, you know, how is your car, and... Because this is normally the things that people talk about. How many cars do you have? Maybe first time they see you, they would know that you have got one car, but after 1 year, they expect you to have a second car. So they ask you, how many cars do you have? Right. How many homes do you have? Where did you go for a holiday this year? Which part of the world? And then you are expected to say some very exotic location. I went on a holiday to this place. But for a devotee, what does it matter where you went? It matters where you went if that particular place where you went to is for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. We are interested in talking about our Vrindavan Yatra. When we went to Vrindavan, we visited so many places. So much of wonderful katha. Every day we used to have katha for 4 to 5 hours. Right? And the devotees are so much inspired, they want to ask us, okay, what was discussed during the katha? Tell me what was discussed during the katha. And then you tell them that pastimes of Krishna, and the conversation goes on and on and on, and then it could go on for hours. And factually, this is what is so enlivening to the heart, not just discussion about all these mundane things that are happening out in the world. Of course, sometimes for the purpose of our service, we may be required to talk about all these mundane things, like when I meet our good friend Anand Vrindavan Prabhu, we are connected with an organization which takes care of devotees' money, so we are required to be talking about some stock market issues and so on. But that is only for the purpose of service. Over and above that, everything should be actually only Krishna. 24 hours of the day, we are supposed to be engaging our ability to speak in Krishna's service. And that Srila Prabhupada explains over here is true mauna. That is actual silence. Silence means to only speak about Krishna and nothing else. And you see from the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, great souls realized that this is actually what Krishna consciousness is all about. Let me not speak anything which is not connected with Krishna. Now we take the example of Maharaj Bharat. We all know how he fell down because he came into contact with a deer, got too much attached to the deer, then had to take birth as a deer. But because he was endowed with the consciousness of his previous life, as a deer, he completely maintained equilibrium. He was not interested in associating with any other deers. He just, somehow or the other, carried on his whole life, remembering Krishna, eating dried leaves, maintaining a life of extreme austerities. And then he got the birth as Jadabharat. And as Jadabharat, he preferred to be dumb, because the people with whom we were associating with were basically materialistic people. All his neighbors, all his relatives, all his brothers were extremely materialistic. They had no concept about Krishna. And they had no desire to understand anything about Krishna. So Jadabharat realized that the best thing to do was to remain dumb. But at the appropriate time, when it came for him to speak philosophy to Maharaj Raghuna, what philosophy he was telling Maharaj Raghuna. You think yourself to be the king, and you think that I'm actually a palanquin carrier, but sometimes you could become the palanquin carrier and I could become the king. What is so great about it? In short, he was telling Maharaj Raghuna that you are in a bodily conception of life. You are attached to this body, and there's nothing else that is there in your life. You just consider yourself to be the king, and you consider everybody else to be your servants, and I have to take service from them because they are my servants. And Maharaj Raghuna was completely transformed. His heart became filled with Krishna consciousness, fell down at the lotus feet of Maharaj Jadabharat, Jadabharat, and paid his obeisances and surrendered. Similarly, we see from the life of Maharaj Rishabdev, also a very great soul. The fifth canto tells us about what sort of instructions he gives to his 100 sons. He takes them on a pilgrimage and gives them such wonderful instructions. He uses his ability to speak in order to instruct his sons. And 9 of his sons became Paramhamsas, the Navayogendras. And then when the time came for him to renounce everything, he became a deaf and dumb man staying in the house. He was continuing to stay in the palace, but he became completely deaf and dumb. And then at an appropriate stage in his life, he decided to go into the forest. And then from there, he started moving all over the cities, naked, completely undisturbed. Because he knew that he was not this body. This body is in any case going to die. People would come and spit on him. They would come and pass foul air in front of him. They would pass urine on his food. But Lord Rishabdev was completely unmoved. He was a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was such an exalted personality that his stool and urine would actually smell so fragrant for about 80 miles. So that is an indication of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this concept of Vanaprastha, the Vanaprastha ashram, is actually meant for us to dedicate our life to preaching about Krishna to all these conditioned souls in this material world. That is the time when, which is supposed to be at the age of 50, you actually go into the forest. But of course, nowadays there are no forests to go to. So you stay in the city. But the husband and the wife engage themselves in preaching. Purifying their consciousness, increasing the number of rounds. Reading the scriptures. And most important, preaching to whoever they may come across about this path of Krishna consciousness. It's easier for a person who becomes relatively senior in age to approach the younger people and preach to them. But at least because he has got gray hair, sometimes they give respect. And they'll at least listen to what he has to say. Our Mahaprabhu Prabhu is such an excellent preacher. He can go to every house. And anybody whom he meets, I remember once we were coming back from Aurangabad by train, and this particular train happened to be 4 hours late. It got stuck somewhere because of heavy rains. And this train, which was supposed to reach at 8:30 in the morning, actually reached Bombay around 12:30. But Mahaprabhu Prabhu, who was with us, he was in such ecstasy, he was in such bliss. Because it so happened that there was a marriage party in that particular train who were returning back to Bombay, and this marriage party was consisting of Marwadis. So practically entirely from the Marwadi community. And Mahaprabhu Prabhu, his bliss and ecstasy you could see in his face was really expanding minute by minute. He would keep going from compartment to compartment, reaching out to people and telling them about Krishna. So much enthusiasm. Practically till 12:30, and he was telling me, I only wish that the train would be delayed for another 4 hours. So here is a person who is like 72 years of age, but so much enthusiasm to preach. And that is what Srila Prabhupada is telling us over here in this purport, that all of us are required to do with our ability to speak. Our ability to speak should be used for glorifying Krishna and glorifying the devotees. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us by his own example how important it is for us to glorify devotees. Yes, one is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But second, to glorify devotees is so much more important. Because when we glorify devotees, this particular quality of envy which is deep-rooted in our heart gradually dissipates. And we see from the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami would go to such great extents to show how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to be involved in glorifying his devotees. Once when all the devotees were coming back from Jagannath Puri to Navadvip, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gathered all the devotees in front of him and started glorifying them one by one. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked at all the devotees and said, I must tell you about this glories of this person called Raghav Pandit. Lord Chaitanya said that none of you can ever imagine what is the devotional quality of Raghav Pandit. To what extent he will go in order to please Krishna, in order to serve the deities. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained how Raghav Pandit would collect very, very wonderful coconuts. Even though he had thousands of coconuts in his backyard, he would go to great endeavor and pay a much higher price in order to collect coconuts from a place which is like 20 kilometers away. And we have to remember that those days there were no vehicles. You had to go by foot. 20 kilometers means 5 hours going, 5 hours coming. And he would take these coconuts and put them in cool water in order to cool. And when the time came for it to be offered, he would clip off the top and then he would place the coconut before the Lord. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that sometimes the Lord would drink the liquid that is there, the nectar that is there in the coconut. And Raghava Pandit would go into so much ecstasy that he would scoop out the kernel and offer that also in a plate. And sometimes the Lord would come and accept that also. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued to tell the devotees that one day it so happened that Raghava Pandit was there in the temple hall and the time came for the coconuts to be offered to the Lord. And the person who was carrying these coconuts in a tray, as he was entering into the temple hall, he accidentally touched the ceiling. And Raghava Pandit's consciousness was so elevated that by looking at this person, he thought to himself that now this person has touched the ceiling and the ceiling is covered by the dust of the devotees, so this offering has become contaminated. And these coconuts which have been acquired with so much of difficulty, Raghava Pandit instructed the servant to throw these coconuts out of the temple. And then he had fresh coconuts bought and offered to the temple. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was telling the devotees that this is the devotional quality of Raghava Pandit. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started glorifying Raghunandan and Mukunda. And he turned to Mukunda and asked Mukunda, "Mukunda, tell me, who is the father and who is the son?" And Mukunda said, "My dear Lord, actually Raghunandan is my father and I am the son." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy. He said, "Yes, that's true. Any person who brings us to Krishna is our father." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started glorifying Mukunda about his qualities. And he started telling the devotees how it was that Mukunda one day was attending. He was a physician in the darbar of the king. And as he was attending to the king, he was explaining to him some medical issue. At that time, one servant came to fan the king with a peacock feather. And Mukunda, just by looking at the peacock feather, went into ecstasy. And Mukunda, he was standing on an elevated platform. Because of his ecstatic symptoms, he became unconscious. And then he lost his balance and started rolling down the steps. And this king got up from his seat and he was very concerned and he came towards Mukunda and asked him, "What is wrong?" And Mukunda, after all, was a Vaishnava. He was not a person to tell him that, "I am experiencing ecstatic symptoms." A devotee does not do that. So he told the king that, "I'm actually suffering from epilepsy and I'm having an epileptic fit." But the king was a very intelligent person and he could realize that here was a person who was actually experiencing love of God. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned towards Vasudev Dutt and started glorifying Vasudev Dutt as if he had thousands of mouths. And he told the devotees that this Vasudev Dutt, in fact before that, he told Shivanand Sen that Vasudev Dutt, although he's a grahastha, he does not know how to take care of his money. Whatever he gets, he spends it. And as a grahastha, one is expected to have some savings. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Shivanand Sen that now you be the administrator of Vasudev Dutt's finances. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started glorifying Vasudev Dutt, saying that here is a person who all the time is praying that, "Let me live in hell eternally. But my dear Lord, please, each and every one of the conditioned souls in this material world, please take them home back to Godhead." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he was saying this, he was having tears in his eyes because he was experiencing the bliss of how it is to glorify devotees. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that what is the need for Vasudev Dutt to be remaining in hell eternally? What is it that the Lord cannot do? There are so many millions and trillions of universes in this world, in this universe, in the material creation. And if one of the universes becomes free from living entities, all the living entities go home back to Godhead, what is the loss for Krishna? And Srila Prabhupada was giving this analogy of mustard seeds in a bag, one mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds, or a fruit on Odumbara tree. There are millions of fruits on Odumbara tree. So if one fruit falls down from Odumbara tree, what is the loss for the Odumbara tree? So Srila Prabhupada would often tell his devotees how important it is for us to cooperate with each other. And one of the means by which we can cooperate with each other is to appreciate the good qualities in devotees. And speak about it. Not just appreciate in our heart, but it's also necessary to let them know that you appreciate the good qualities. Because by genuine appreciation, our heart gets purified. This deep-rooted feeling of envy that is there in our heart from time immemorial, it's so difficult for us to remove that particular anartha. When we genuinely appreciate devotees, Krishna is satisfied. Krishna is pleased. And he'll bestow upon us all mercy to make advancement in our Krishna consciousness. So that is the true purpose of using this particular ability to speak. If you do not glorify the Lord and if you do not glorify the devotees, best is to remain silent. And of course, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Kirtaniya Sadahari, chant the holy names of the Lord continuously. 24 hours of the day, we can chant the holy names of the Lord. Right? So a devotee engages only in those activities which are conducive to his Krishna consciousness. Anything else, he desists from. Why does he avoid the association of non-devotees? Why is a devotee told that you must avoid the association of non-devotees? Only for this purpose, because the non-devotee, the materialistic people, they have so many things to talk about. As Prabhupada says over here in the purport, one who wants to say something can show himself to be a big orator, but rather than go on speaking nonsense, better to remain silent. And also further, Srila Prabhupada says over here that speakers at assemblies, conferences, and meetings generally speak foolishly like toads. Very, very powerful purport for all of us to, particularly for me, to apply in my life and appreciate the importance of how it is necessary for us to be preaching this message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada has given us, through his purports, a complete understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. Exactly what we are supposed to do. What is expected of us in our endeavor to practice Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada gives us through his purports. So it's 9:15 now. So we'll stop over here. There's also a marriage that's going to take place shortly. So thank you all very much for your patient hearing. Sorry if I have exceeded or said something that I should not have. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.